You know, folks, Reverend Clergy, thank you very much. And it's an honor to be here with Senator Jones and others and so many of you who have been through so much and done so much. And the love in this church is it's kind of overwhelming. It's kind of overwhelming. You know, occasionally in life, there are moments that are so stark, they divide all that came before from all that comes after. They stop the clocks. They rip away the trivial from the essential. They force us to confront difficult truths about our institutions, about our society, about ourselves. 10:22 a.m., September 15, 1963, was such a moment. An event defined by racial prejudice, hatred, and white supremacy. Even in a city then described, as I remember, as the most segregated in the United States of America, the assassination of four bright, promising, innocent young girls preparing for Sunday school, the indiscriminate cruelty of a stick of dynamite, the appalling impunity afforded the murderers while a grieving community cried out for justice and the nation watched. It pierced us. Addie Mae, Cynthia Carroll, Denise, their murders laid bare the lie that a child could be free in America while oppression's long shadow darkened our cities and ruled our countryside. These children of God today would be approaching 70 years of age. Each individual life, rich in promise, stolen. Each future, unfulfilled. Sarah Collins Randolph, Addie Mae's sister, who I got to see again today, still carries the scars, both externally and internally. For Sarah and for so many of the family members here today, this is not a symbolic loss that transfixed the world and inspired the whole nation. It's personal. And even 56 years later, it's tragic. When you lose a child so young, as many of us have experienced in different circumstances, the loss is always punctuated by questions, no matter how much time passes. What would she look like? What would she have become? What would she have done? What memories will never be? The heart breaks anew whenever we remember what an incredible potential an opportunity was denied that child, your family, and all in their orbit. But we must never let ourselves forget. Dr. King so rightly proclaimed at the funeral service the quote, "Their death says to us, we must work passionately and unrelentingly for the realization of the American dream." And indeed, that blast took aim at the very foundations of this community in 1963. It blew wide open the door for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It shook my generation to its core. It helped us realize in other parts of the country, different races. It helped us realize working on the fringes of the movement was not enough. The struggle against hate and injustice, the institutional racism, had to become the unrelenting work of the generation before and after. It summed up the battle many of us have been fighting for half a century, voting rights, civil rights, equal justice, equal opportunities. For more than five decades, after we lost those four innocent children, we gather in this hallowed ground, conceived and constructed by Black dreams, raised up by Black resilience, and sanctified by Black blood and tears. We must acknowledge that there can be no realization of the American dream without grappling with the original sin of slavery. Brought to these shores over 400 years ago. And the centuries-long campaign of violence, fear, trauma wrought upon Black people in this country, the domestic terrorism of white supremacy, has been the antagonist of our highest ideals from before the founding of this country. Lynch mobs, arsonists, bomb makers, lone gunmen. And as we all now realize, this violence does not live in the past. The same poisonous ideology that lit the fuse on 16th Street pulled the trigger at Mother Emanuel. And Pastor, you have such an incredible congregation. Pulled the trigger at Mother Emanuel and unleashed the anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic massacre in Pittsburgh and Poway. Yeah. And we saw white supremacists gun down innocent Latino immigrants in El Paso parking lot with a military-style weapon, declaring he would stop, quote, the Hispanic invasion of Texas. We have not relegated racism and white supremacy to the pages of history. But the greatness of this nation has always been and must continue to be that we still strive to relegate it. We hold these truths self-evident. We've never lived up to it, but we've never before walked away from it. It's what unites us. It's the American creed. It's one of the most powerful ideas in the history of the world, and it lives in each and every one of us. Our belief in it is what compels us to act. We remember the hope of Scripture. Hate evil, love good, and establish justice in the gate, and the Lord may be gracious to us. You know, it's in the wake of these before and after moments, when the choice between good and evil is starkest, when the pain pierces the heart the deepest, when what's at stake matters the most, that we decide who we are, and maybe more importantly, who we want to be. That's when, as people and as a nation, we're defined. In my life, when Dr. King was assassinated and my city of Wilmington, Delaware, was occupied by the National Guard after burning, I faced, and many of my neighborhood faced, a defining moment. In my case, it was, do I stay in a big law firm I just had graduated? Do I leave and become a public defender? I left and took the first steps in a life unfulfilled but committed to civil rights. Before and after, my life has never been the same. When my first wife and daughter were killed and my two boys were so badly injured in a car accident, I faced, like many of you, a defining moment. Walk away from public life or stay? I chose to stay before and after. My life would never be the same. Lieutenant Colonel, my son, Major Bo Biden, Attorney General of the State of Delaware, died a painful, long death. He made me promise that I would not withdraw. I'll be all right, Dad. Just promise me. Promise me. He made me promise not to retreat like all of you have been asked by your beloved, to not retreat from the fight. A defining moment before and after. Never the same. Charlottesville. When I saw those torches, when I heard those chants, and saw the hate on the march, I knew, like all of you, although I had hoped it would never happen again, I knew, like all of you, that hate was on the march. I knew it was again a defining moment for me, for the nation, for all of us, and that our silence would be complicity. Our silence is complicity. Before and after Charlottesville, this nation will never be the same. The psalm tells us, weeping may endure for the night, but joy cometh in the morning. The philosopher tells us, faith sees best in the dark. Now hate is on the rise again, and we're at a defining moment again in American history. Who are we? What do we want to be? After Charlottesville, I said that I believed that we're in a battle for the soul of America. I say it again today, we're in the battle for the soul of America. And here, at historic 16th Street Baptist Church, there's no more powerful reminder of what's at stake, no more poignant example of what is demanded of us in response. It's a battle we fought again and again. It's a battle that's claimed countless lives. Hate only hides. It doesn't go away. If you give it oxygen, it comes out from under the rocks. It can be defeated or drowned out, but it can never be totally vanquished. But we also should realize that the revulsion of hate as its ugliest can summon us as a nation to do better, to bring out the best in us. The coddling of white supremacists, so heinous it cannot be ignored by any decent American, presents an opportunity to continue to make progress against systematic racism. I believe the American people are ready, just as they were after the Civil Rights Act in 1964, to take another step. I'm sure in the first hours after the bomb exploded, it was hard to see through the smoke and rubble of this church and our hearts. Hard to see through the smoke and rubble to a day like today. As Dr. King eulogized those girls, perhaps not even he could have imagined that a day nearly 50 years later, when the nation's first black president would award the Congressional Gold Medal, one of our highest civilian honors, to those young women. It's only with persistent effort, it's only with fortitude, it's only with faith in ourselves and the future that may yet to be, that can change things, that change comes, sometimes slowly, sometimes all at once, but it continues. We saw it in my good friend, we've been friends for years, Doug, Senator Jones, here today. He, like many of you, he never gave up on justice for Addie Mae or Cynthia or Carol. Yes, sir. Or Denise, never. Yes, sir. It didn't matter to him that almost 40 years had passed. Doing the right thing doesn't tarnish with time. We know we're not there yet, and no one knows it better. My mom used to have an expression, you want to understand me? Walk in my shoes a mile. Those of us who are white try, but we can never fully understand. No matter how hard we try. We are almost at this next phase of progress, in my view. It's hard, heart-wringing work. But there's almost 330 Americans. I know there's nothing we can't accomplish if we stand together. Stand against hate. Stand up for what at our best our nation believes. Honesty, decency, treating everyone with dignity and respect. Giving everyone a fair shot, leaving nobody behind. Giving hate no safe harbor. Demonizing no one, not the poor, the powerless, the immigrant, or the other. Standing as a beacon for the world, being part of something bigger than ourselves. That's who we are and who we're supposed to be. And that's why I believe so passionately that we have got to work to bring this country together. This is the work demanded for the rebirth and renewal. 56 years ago, the Sunday school lesson was a love that forgives, as we all know. Reverend Cross never got to give his sermon that day. But it's a lesson that's subsequently been delivered by Reverend Price more than, I don't know how many times now, Reverend, you've done it. But it'll be done again today. We have to choose forgiveness again and again. And God, that takes incredible strength. I'll never forget traveling with President Obama to meet the families in your church, Reverend, Mother Emanuel in Charleston, South Carolina, after Reverend Pinckney, who was a personal friend of mine, was murdered along with 8 other prisoners. I lost my son, Bo, only days earlier, but I wanted to be there with him. I watched in awe as President Obama addressed the community as he sang with them Amazing Grace. Yes. And he offered healing, solidarity, and leadership that the community and the nation sought so desperately and so desperately needed. I witnessed that Amazing Grace. That was a Friday. I decided to stay because I wanted to go to the service on Sunday with my wife, Jill, to attend the service. As I sat through the service, I was buoyed by that congregation about the loss my family just suffered weeks earlier. It made us, it helped us. I was astounded by the amazing grace of those prisoners, the families of the victims, as they chose so quickly after their loss by a white supremacist murdering them to forgive the killer. I was dumbfounded. It made me believe even more strongly everything about my faith. The killer was forgiven to bind up the wounds and the wrongs done to them with compassion. To be able to live again in a community after such a horrifying rupture was astounding to me. Their example is a moral challenge to each of us in our lives. So my prayer to all of us this morning is that in this moment, when our nation must again once decide again who we are, what we stand for, we will remember the strength of this community. We remember the moment that time stopped, and then remember everything that came after. And we'll choose once more to fight for our shared American dream. Mr. Mayor, Reverend Price, and this beloved community, thank you for the faith and hope you give all the rest of us. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of this day.
Yes, sir. God bless you.